This is the Saxo Market Call, the daily financial markets podcast, across asset classes and around the world.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It's Thursday, 15th of June, 2023, the day after an FOMC meeting, which was pulled off as a hawkish pause if we look at the outcome here. So there was a pause as most expected, but a surprisingly hawkish upgrade to the rate path, the 5.1% dot plot for this year raised to 5.6%, and then the one for next year raised to 4.6% from 4.3%, and even the 2025 one raised to 3.4%. So just a general sense that the Fed wants to get the message out that it wants to keep rates higher for longer. The funny thing was, and then let me just go through the economic projections. Actually, you can see those today on slide four. The key adjustments there, the PCE core for this year raised, but I think that was less impactful because they still are confident that they can get core inflation down to the prior projections for 24 and 25 there. A bit more interesting on the unemployment rate, with the adjustments lower both for this year, sharply lower to 4.1%, and then 4.5% next year. And then the GDP revision. I think if we recall back to March, there was this fear that the banking turmoil would immediately lead to a credit crunch, and they got maybe a little bit more pessimistic on the economy, and some of that is coming out here. So what was the market reaction? Well, we saw about 12 basis points priced in more for the December SOFR future, so about half a rate hike was all the market was willing to give to the Fed. And we saw in the question and answer session, Powell tying himself into knots, trying to explain why the heck they would pause now only to pick up the rate hikes again later out. He was talking about there's both the time of the rate hikes and then there's the speed, and there's been a lot of speed, and maybe we need to spread it out some more. Some suggesting that the pause here could be just to see and make sure that the big Treasury issuance won't disrupt things too much. And I think that's a fairly credible look at it, but he didn't maybe explicitly want to spell that out. So there you have it. What was the market reaction, Peter, in terms of the equity market? It was pretty mixed. I mean, you had rates sharply higher at one point, and then they're back lower, and then essentially ending just slightly higher on the day. And equity markets just dancing all over the place, but pretty much ending up unchanged with, of course, some single stock stories. But the market was sort of struggling to get the takeaway here.
Yeah, I mean, you can say it was, compared to the trading ranges and the trading sessions we've had, it was a little bit more undirectional yesterday, as you said. I mean, we had a trading range that covered and more the entire trading range in the day before, and we ended unchanged for the day. Seeing a little bit more weakness this morning here in European time. The S&P 500 futures are trading at the lows for this intraday session so far, as I speak right now. I think the key signal here is, we had this internal talk. I agree with Altea. I don't think there might be a lot to gain from just being more aggressive on that short end of the yield curve. I think the next signal, as you have pointed out, John, is watching this long end of the yield curve. That's really, more important, I think, also as well for equities. And the 4% is clearly the next big level to watch. So that's where I have my attention on equities. I think the equity market more broadly was a little bit relaxed and quite neutral overall to the response we had yesterday. There's also no real interesting directions across our theme baskets. It was a pretty mixed session, to say the least.
Yeah. So what are your observations then on the curve, Altea? I mean, there was just a minor pop in the front end saying, okay, maybe the Fed's going to be a bit more hawkish than we expect, but the market still reserves its own forecast on how things will shape up. But that long end is poking at some key levels here. The 10-year ended at 3.86%-ish high that was back, I'm not sure when that was, sometime back in late May, looks like. So what are you watching here as the coming days unfold?
Well, John, what I'm going to look at is that slide that I put on slide number 5. It's the chart on the left-hand side, and it shows me the real Fed fund rate and the yield curve, the spread between the 10 years and the 2 years. And why do I like to look at that chart? Well, because as inflation is going to continue to fall, the real Fed fund rate is going to become increasingly more positive. And that means that financial conditions will become even more tighter. And I like to see also the yield curve because it's deeply inverted. Basically, the difference between 10 years yields and 2 years yields is around 90 basis points. And that's huge. And at this point, my question is what Peter was saying, you know, like why the Fed would hike even more, because whatever, if it hikes once or twice more, it would just invert that yield curve further. What the market needs is long-term yields to go higher. And yesterday, the hawkish pose that the Federal Reserve delivered increased the inversion of the yield curve. So if the stance is not changed, it's going to be only the front part of the yield curve that will continue to rise, while long-term yields, yes, they will continue to rise, but not as fast as the Federal Reserve needs to fight inflation.
Yeah, and then we have an ECB meeting up today. I guess expectations a bit more muted, or the surprise function maybe a bit more muted there because of the, on the one hand, you've had a couple of downside inflation surprises, but we've got a weak economy on our hands here in Europe. So ECB sort of staying on message and not bringing any drama, or what's your take here?
Well, today I'm going to look especially at the staff economic projections. And the reason for that is that in March, the ECB showed some projections that indicated the growth will be sustained. Actually, it will come to pre-pandemic levels already in 2024. I believe that that's too bullish and that needs to be changed. But how that is going to affect bonds, that's going to be an interesting one because this morning the bond market opened up with a hawkish tilt. We have seen European sovereigns breaking above very important levels, especially the 2 year Schatz yields broke above strong resistance at 3%, and they are rising towards 3.13%. Already that move is tightening somewhat conditions, but I want to take you on slide number 6. On the chart on the left-hand side, I put the real ECB deposit rate. And what does that shows you is that after interest rate hikes since last year until today, today, the ECB, by hiking another 25 basis points, should bring that real ECB deposit rate back where it was before the pandemic. And the big question mark is that is going to be enough, because still that real ECB deposit rate is going to be deeply negative and is going to be the same that it was when it was in expansionary policies and it wanted to ignite inflation. That's the big question mark. But with the Fed pausing, it may be that the ECB will deliver another rate hike and it might give some ammunition to wait until September to deliver another one.
Okay. Yeah, I have a hard time seeing them wanting to pound the table too much with the economy where it is in Europe. But the big effect in FX, so the dollar was a bit all over the map. It's coming back a little bit firmer this morning with the U.S. yields where they are, and I think sentiment is still extremely important for the dollar. But it was the weak Japanese yen across the board that was the big story here, with the market suspecting the Bank of Japan is still not about doing anything in terms of tightening policy after having declared that up to 18-month policy review at Ueda's first meeting as Bank of Japan governor back in April. But I think pressure is rapidly mounting. If you look at currency pairs like sterling yen, even euro yen, and of course dollar yen, although we're in a little bit different place in dollar yen because the dollar has weakened since the crazy 150-plus spike we saw back late last year. But that pace of change, I suspect they may have to flag that the something along the lines of, you know, we won't allow a disorderly market, policy will respond if necessary. They need to do something here on Friday, just at least to indicate a willingness to tweak to address this weekend, especially if that U.S. 10-year, as we've been talking about, is coming untethered from the range and is pushing towards 4%. We saw China out with its expected rate hike that was very well flagged overnight. Not much change in the dollar renminbi rate. So not much of a story there. And we've seen a strong Aussie once again on a weak Kiwi or New Zealand GDP report. and on a very strong Australian employment report overnight. So the Aussie is just shooting the lights out. Copper above a key resistance level as well. I think that's playing a role, as well as hopes that Chinese stimulus will bring some more demand for Australia's exports in the commodities sector. All right, let's get back over to the equity market. And we've been talking about this Lennar home builder all week. Peter, I'm taking your last stock first on your stocks to watch page today on slide 8. I thought it was some interesting observations you made, and then a couple of things that I brought up, at least in one article or comment I saw on the market. So take us through that and what else you're looking at today.
Yeah, we did talk about Lennar already a week ago on the podcast, and we talked about this divergence that there were signs, the typical drivers of Lennar's result and orders that were getting out of lockstep with what we saw in the price. And as you can see here on slide 8, we came to a new high basically before this earnings release. And this earnings release that they reported last night after the close were much better than expected. They beat both on adjusted earnings and the revenue side of things. But then the market got really excited when they highlighted their estimates for new orders in the current quarter we're in, or fiscal quarter we're in. 18 to 19,000 new orders versus estimated 15,700. That's a pretty big beat. And they use language and commentaries in the press release saying that they're seeing the market getting more vibrant. People are coming back. They want to build new homes. They actually seemed quite upbeat. It suggests there are two possible explanations. It can also be a mix of the two, of course. And I'll give the one, and then you can talk about what you read, John, because one of them is that the labor market, the employment situation in the U.S. is still very strong, and the deleveraging that happened after the U.S. financial crisis have put U.S. households apparently in a situation where they have been able to absorb a 500 basis point in the policy rate move, and also a considerable move in the mortgage rate, and they have absorbed that, and now they're just adjusting to this new reality. And you wouldn't see this bump up in new orders if the U.S. potential buyers of new homes were not confident about the future. So I think that's one explanation. And then you saw something, you read something else, John, which I find
somebody made the comment, and it's kind of compelling the logic. I mean, we've talked about that during the pandemic years of 20 through even early into 2022, that with those extremely low mortgage rates, everybody was able to refinance, and they're sitting on extremely low house payments and are still sitting on those. And if they're happy to stay in their house, we'll be sitting on those for as long as they can stand to sit on them. Those that don't have to move, or even those that are weighing whether to move, have to consider that if they do move to a similar house, that it could cost, maybe the prices have come off a little bit, but that mortgage payment is going to be dramatically higher at a 6-7% in an interest rate than it was at a 3% rate. So there was the argument that the supply of existing homes is somewhat weak, and those that do have to move, therefore, can't find existing homes. So you buy a new home because that's the only thing that's available. So there may be an irony in this cycle that's a little bit different from prior cycles that didn't see such crazy drama in the mortgage rates. I just thought it was an interesting comment, and it'd be very interesting to see how this cycle plays out. And it would explain also why there was one chart I put up where we saw the new housing starts somewhat decoupling from Lennar's price performance, and might explain some of this dynamic. But just to add a comment there. But back to you for the other stuff you have on your radar.
I think on a final note, I'll just quickly say that it, with a home builder like Lennar trading at very close to all-time highs, it just bolsters this view that the equity market is not really looking at a recession. And I still find that as the most interesting divergence I've seen in many years, at least. This very big conflict that the bond market and economies are constantly talking about, what is the economic outlook and a recession. You had the Cedardale, Kenneth Griffin, preparing his trading firm for a recession. And then you have just completely different signals in the equity market, especially from a whole builder. Anyway, two other stocks to watch today. H&M here in Europe, they are missing on the Q2 revenue. They say it's mainly due to unfavorable weather conditions. So, well, fine. And then they put out an outlook call where they say the June sales is actually off to a very good start here in Europe. So, which would be great, because both in the US and Europe, the economic activity has slowed down a little bit here over the past couple of months. So it would be great to see a little bit of a pickup here. And then I'm just pulling out here a little bit of a random story, but I found it rather interesting, given that we have seen this pretty big resurgence in in green transformation stocks, and Norsk Hydro is out with a press release this morning saying that they have done the first large-scale test in their facility in Spain, creating aluminium using green hydrogen that was produced from hydropower. So it's not an easy thing to do. Just like when Norsk Hydro invented a couple of years back a method to create a synthetic fertilizer from using again hydropower. This is actually a pretty innovative company, and I just wanted to put it out there. Interesting developments. And then fast forward, next slide, slide 9. Adobe, the big earnings release to watch today. A lot of excitement. The shares are up 43% going into this earnings release. A lot of excitement over this recent product release they did, where they put out a lot of AI capabilities around their content creation software, and that has sparked a lot of interest about Adobe. So let's see what they have to say about the outlook for the rest of the year.
Yeah, and I love the angle here, because you have your original idea around the whole AI phenomenon is that who makes money in these bonanzas, especially. And in the first instance, the shovels. So like the shovels being like in the gold rush. And the shovels in this case are the raw computing power as seen in things like NVIDIA chips and AMD chips, et cetera. So here we have an actual application. Does the app side see the actual type of growth or hope or guidance that we saw on the physical horsepower computing-wise, the hype around that? So yeah, a very interesting release, to say the least, on this whole AI situation. Macro calendar, fast forward to slide 10. Yes, the ECB today and the press conference. Very interesting to see the latest staff economic projections, as Althea discussed. As well, a pretty decent load of U.S. data, that retail sales, very interesting. And the jobless claims after last week saw it popping above 250K for the first time in the cycle. Is that revised lower? Is this next print above 250K? Supposedly expected is 245K. There's always a mean reversion in the expectations, some kind of average of the latest data point plus the moving average. We'll see on that front, and I think that's key, those U.S. data points for the U.S. long end as well, which again is also the key factor that pressurizes or not that Bank of Japan meeting coming into the Asian session, late Asian session usually when they're out with their decision, and very late Asian session with their press conference with Bank of Japan Governor Ueda. So stay tuned for that. Still lots of fireworks potential here through the end of this week, and we'll be back tomorrow with the next Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter at @SaxoMarketCall or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.